The idea that universities are crushing free speech is a popular talking point for conservative critics and Republican politicians. But things aren't always what they seem. Sometimes, complaining about the so-called speech police amounts to giving tacit approval to hate speech. Take the Middle Ages. When I think about medieval history, this is what I hear in my head. Definitely not this. That's audio from the deadly white supremacist rally in Charlottesville in 2017. And some of those people carrying Nazi and Confederate flags were also in medieval costume, with crusader crosses and shields with medieval insignias on them. White nationalists are fanboys for the Middle Ages? Well, a few weeks after that rally, feminist medievalist Dorothy Kim, who's now a professor at Brandeis, wrote an open letter to her colleagues, exhorting them to speak out against white supremacy. Then the alt-right got wind of her piece. She got hate mail, threats of violence. She had to request security guards for her lectures. Now her profession is in an uproar, and her personal life is upended. Let's go back and talk about where this all began for you. The summer of 2017, I think this was maybe about 10 days after the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville.
Yes.
You wrote a blog post titled Teaching Medieval Studies in a Time of White Supremacy.
Yes.
What sparked that? What was going on that made you want to write that?
I basically had been watching online all the things that had happened at Charlottesville. All that sort of Viking, Black Sun, Old Norse imagery, figures like Matt Heimbach talking back and forth about how you're supposed to look at the rally, bring these shields and not those shields, dress like this, but not like this. We don't want to look like we're at some random cosplay event. We want to have a very specific visual rhetoric.
I guess I think probably a lot of people would be surprised that white nationalists and white supremacists are fans of the Middle Ages? What is it about the Middle Ages that appeals to them?
Well, it depends. So the alt-right or the far-right is a sort of complex ecosystem, and they have different nodes in that ecosystem. So you have, for instance, the Sons of Vinland, the Wolves of Vinland in the Pacific Northwest, and they're interested in the Vikings and sort of imagining a pre-modern warrior past. And obviously the Sons and Wolves of Vinland have been deeply violent in the Pacific Northwest. They are often the instigators in these really terrible white supremacist marches and rallies in Portland, for example, and also obviously have murdered people. One of the interesting things I've been trying to think through and work out is why the Middle Ages is so important to so many parts of that alt-right ecosystem, far-right ecosystem, but also why is it so easy to co-opt it? It's about fields not wanting to deal with their own academic histories in propping up sort of global colonialism and also narratives of white supremacy.
This isn't new. Medieval studies has
been
complicit with white supremacy in the past.
Yeah, so I wrote a piece for Time last year where I talked about the Vikings. And I talked about the fact that the Vikings academically have a long history where basically people in the 19th and even the 18th century used it as a way to prop up like white superiority and fascism. This has a history, right? Similarly, there is current upheaval in another area of medieval studies right now, and this is Anglo-Saxon studies, with also similar histories at stake and with a lot of co-option by white supremacists interested in that area and topic. It's embedded in the scholarship. It mostly has to do with upholding white global empire is in fact superior to the rest of the world.
So you wound up writing this blog post warning other medievalists that your field was being weaponized, as you put it, by hate groups.
Yes.
And you basically said, if you teach the Middle Ages, you can't ignore this.
Yes.
You have to say something. What? What did you want your colleagues to do?
I think I want them to be really overt about how they frame the Middle Ages. I want them to be overt about not discussing these sort of fantasies of whiteness in relationship to the pre-modern past. If you walk into a classroom and you're teaching the Vikings, I don't think you can just say, oh, aren't they great? And then just sort of move along, if that makes sense.
You actually, in that piece you wrote, you used the analogy of weapons dealing.
Yes.
To describe the role medievalists have in the classroom today, which is kind of incendiary language. What did you mean?
I think because if we are not sort of critical about what is going on and how our fields or these histories are being weaponized, they do become ideological weapons. And I think we see this with the number of white terrorists who have constantly used various medieval sort of references or cues in their various manifestos or on their various weapons when they have gone into Black, Indigenous, people of color communities in order to kill people. Every time there's a really terrible white male shooter, I look through various manifestos and things, and there's always some sort of medieval reference.
Really?
Yes.
Like what?
New Zealand. He used multiple medieval references. He used the Vikings. He also talked about Crusader things. So there was like a whole little list. This keeps popping up as part of white shooter supremacist manifestos.
Well, speaking of violence, after you wrote that post to your fellow medievalists, you wound up getting targeted yourself by the
Yes.
alt-right. What exactly happened?
Basically, a University of Chicago medieval history professor decided to write a blog hit piece on me. She tagged Milo, and then Milo wrote...
This is Milo Yiannopoulos?
Yes. Milo Yiannopoulos wrote another piece about me and sort of sent it out to his 2.3 million followers. After that, also, obviously, I became a target.
Were you getting death threats?
I did get violent threats, yes.
My God, how do you deal with that?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think, you know, obviously it's good to have mental health counseling. It's unfortunate, but we live in a world right now where these things happen, particularly in relationship to minority Black, Indigenous, women of color voices. It's a thing that has been happening for a while.
So I imagine that you have thought a lot since then about the larger context, the debates about free speech that we're having these days, and not only on college campuses. And I wonder how you're thinking about free speech has evolved in light of all this.
What I see, sort of this idea that there's some sort of free speech crisis, is actually, it's a red herring. It's basically a way for the far right to infiltrate various discussions and use various terminologies in order to get some sort of outrage reaction. It's not actually about free speech.
What is it about?
It is about getting people to panic. It's like a panic button.
You're saying it's a dog whistle.
It's a dog whistle. I think it's very interesting in relationship to academia that the kind of red herring of free speech is used, and it's sort of framed out that all these much more conservative academics are being attacked and terrible things are happening to them. But the statistics show that actually the people who are being fired and are losing money and also safety are actually the ones with less power because they are Black, Indigenous, people of color, they're transgender scholars, and I think people are not dealing with that. And what's going on now is for a lot of historians who are working or have worked on fascist ideology, it must feel like deja vu.
Dorothy Kim is a medievalist at Brandeis University.